Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: Startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Ein Doppelcheeseburger, eine Pommes und eine Cola für 4,99? Lohnt sich das überhaupt für Maccas?
All das lohnt sich für euch. Die günstigen Mac Smart Menüs jetzt schon ab 4,99 bei McDonald's. Unverbindliche Preisempfehlungen und teilnehmenden Restaurants.
Hitler, Roswell, JFK, cryptozoology and NSA, Robo Woman and 11 government lies, tell them all about it, those conspiracy guys.
Experts also say that the full effect of these explosions weren't realized, that all the gunpowder didn't go off, and you know, it could have been much, much worse. That's why when people go, "That's pretty pitiful, fucking
that's not that
bomb.
Big an explosion."
If that's going to be a bomb, you know, that's not like we see on the TV.
Yeah,
like a bomb goes off.
So they're saying all the gunpowder didn't burn. The bombs didn't blow up as big as they would have blown up, so they didn't destroy as much areas as they would have blown up, but they still released a lot of shrapnel, which is why you have that many injuries for people. Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah, there was analysis of the bomb scene, right? One guy, he was on the news, and he was saying, "See all that white stuff there? That's all ammonium nitrate," which was one of the reagents used in 9/11 as well.
Right.
And that the bomb could have done a lot more damage if all of that had been ignited. Now I'm looking at that going, you're an expert in bombs and you can't realize that that's the fucking glass from the window that's been blown out and put onto the floor. I'm going to put that clip up online because it's one of the most redonkulous clips. But yeah, his name is Mr. Barry, and he was apparently an explosives expert. And he started dropping in 9/11 references and ammonium nitrate. It was a complete like misrepresentation of what the picture was.
Yeah.
But at the time, people were like, "Bombs?" And he's like, "Yeah, bombs, 9/11. Bombs.
Bombs.
And he was like, "Yep, yeah, thanks, Mr. Barry." That's his expert opinion.
Is it your first name or last? His first name is Barry?
Mr. Barry.
Yeah, what's his last name? His last name is Barry as well. His name's Barry. That's the stuff.
Like Boutros Ghali.
Yeah, Boutros Barry.
I couldn't get his first name, but it's a really weird little video that he's going,
yeah,
like, they didn't blow up fully. They should have been much stronger. Why should they have been much stronger? Mm. They blow more people up?
My big question in relation to the blast, and especially the first one, is like there's kind of plastic tables around that area there's tables around there with plastic cups on them. You know, at the marathon, they had just clear plastic cups full of water.
Plastic cups didn't even get knocked over.
Like empty, there's an empty plastic cup standing upright on the table after the bomb's gone off. Like you see the bomb go off, you see the smoke settle, and the cup's still standing there.
Yeah, this is like the paper that's not burned in the hole that was made in the Pentagon after the plane went.
Yes.
This is the evidence of like, what the fuck?
Yes, this does remind me a lot of September 11th with like passports falling out of planes completely undamaged. It's like, if a thing happened
too
here,
many disparities.
Where are there no signs of it?
Yeah, too many questionable, tangible items. Too many, like. There are pictures showing scorch marks where the blast took place afterwards. Like when the people were cleared away and all the stuff, they're like, "Here's where the bomb went off."
And you can tell like there's a big black circle on the ground.
Post-match analysis. But
yeah,
earlier, there's pictures of that exact place where there's like patients sitting on the sidewalk waiting to be, you know, seen. Like sitting really nonchalantly.
Yeah.
Like sitting there
where the bomb was.
Apparently covered in blood, bleeding loads, and just sitting there like looking around going, "Is someone gonna..."
You're thinking of the blonde kind of jogger lady, is it? Who's just looking...
Blonde
really
jogger lady who's
staring off
who's supposed
space
to have had her... her like Achilles tendon,
crazy injuries,
legs,
yeah,
all like
serious
fucked
injuries
up and all.
Absolutely.
Broken fibia and tibia and all this stuff. Or there's like one old guy and he's wearing like glasses and like a hunter's cap.
Yeah.
And he's leaning back and his legs are crossed and he's leaning back on his wrists.
Yeah.
Like up straight wearing sunglasses.
Oh, like Indian sitting.
Like, yeah, not Indian sitting, but like you would on a beach or something.
Oh, legs
straight,
out straight crossed.
Out straight crossed,
yeah,
at the ankle.
Yeah. Guy at a festival, at a music festival, kind of far back from the
And he's
the
just
stage.
Leaning back on his wrists because he doesn't want to go all the way down on his elbow, but he might as well be down on his elbow.
Yeah. I always see there's a few people down on their elbows.
Yeah. Like, what
the lady
fuck?
Sitting in front of Jeff Bowen is missing his leg with the crazy bone coming out. She's down on her elbow
but
looking
do
cool.
Do they not realise like that there's the world's news cameras are trained on them? Like, it's such a fucking weird
Yeah, but
scenario.
I think for them, in that moment where it's like 30 seconds to 5 minutes of go time.
Yeah.
Like
chaos that's going to be repeated on 24-hour news stations.
Yeah, I think for them, I think they're probably like ready to just like snap into the moment. She was just late, kind of kicking in her.
Yeah,
and a few of them were kind of late kicking in there. Like, here's the other thing. This sounds terrible. If there indeed was, and I don't believe for a second it was, but if there indeed was actual people injured in that first kind of bomb site, and in these photos that we're talking about with these crazy injuries and this weird looking blood on the ground. If these are real injured people, they're some of the quietest, most relaxed injured people you've ever seen. You don't see anyone rising in agony. You don't see like tears pouring out of someone's eyes.
You
don't see screams.
You don't see blood spurting out from severed arteries.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see anybody like clamoring out of that area.
Yes.
To go like, I can walk, but my arm is fucked up. I'm not going to just lie here and wait for someone to come and treat me. I'm going to go get help myself.
Yes, the arterial spray for me is a big thing. If you're a fan of the CSIs or the forensic detectives, or
the Dexters.
Yes, you'll know very much about the arterial spray. So when you sever an artery and open a wound on a person's body and they're still alive, the blood can pump like incredible distance and with great pressure. There's just a huge amount, well, there's a huge lack of arterial spray.
It just seems like it all went out on the ground conveniently enough.
Just like plopped out as if you're like, you were tearing open your bag and it all just plopped out in one go.
Is that not what they, there's also a picket fence that they're at that first bomb site, which is the one where all the Jeff Bowmans and all the people, like, they get,
yeah, this is the zone we're focusing on. It's the second blast site where there seems really well have been actual people injured and possibly were people killed. But this first blast and this really questionable area of photos.
Yeah, this is the main stage. Yeah. Like, right.
So this is the part with all the flags stage. In front of it. The flags that the witnesses will tell you were blown down and blown apart.
Iconic finish line scene.
Yeah. But as you see the finish line explosion, what you see is the flags don't really move too much. And then it is basically all the people that rush in to help the injured have a little bit of trouble just kind of pulling the amount of stuff out of the way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crapola piled in front
metal fences. Then there's like a lovely wooden picket fence.
Yeah.
And then they have all of these Adidas blue tarpaulins or whatever they're
hoardings. Yeah.
So I have to pull all these out of the way, but they didn't pull them out of the way until everyone's in place.
Yeah, it took a good while to pull them out of the way.
So it seems like these picket fences were superfluous.
Yeah.
They were, like when you have crowd control situation, you need those, you know, those concert fences that you can just pull around, those metal concert fences, we all know them. They wanted to maybe like gussy them up a little bit because it's the Boston Marathon. It didn't want to look real cheap, like holding the crowd back with like just plain old metal fences.
Yeah,
so they put some like lovely wooden picket fences on these hoardings and put some.
But it was especially, I don't know, it looks really weird to me, the stuff they use.
When you're looking at
it covers a large area.
When you're looking at Carlos Arredondo jumping in over these fences.
Yes, this is the cowboy man. This is
the
cowboy
man. We're talking
the cowboy hat, the Costa Rican fellow. I just know.
When you see Carlos Arredondo jumping in over these fences and then like when they're taking them all away, it seems like there's a way lot more fencing there than needs to be.
Than is necessary.
Like, it's very messy. And there's people even, as he's climbing over the fence, he's stepping on the fence while the fence is crushing someone underneath it.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems really messy and unnecessary.
Yeah.
Possibly to obfuscate the view of the bodies, the injuries, and the blood. Like, they were like, we need something to cover us up while we set up the scene. And as soon as the scene is set up, you can take all that stuff away. It seems like that when you're watching it.
Yeah.
You know? The devices themselves, these pressure cooker bombs, were supposed to act as claymores, spraying shrapnel upwards toward an enemy.
Yeah.
This is what an expert says. They were supposed to be upwards at a 60-degree angle, but nobody fell at the times the bomb exploded.
Yeah.
So, like, if you have a yoke on the ground and it's by your shins, it's not your feet that's getting blown off. It's your thighs and your middle.
Right.
Because it's not going to go out towards the ground.
The claymore kind of fires the ball bearing slightly
fires
up.
Yeah. Do you know?
30-degree or higher incline, kind of.
As the bomb blew, there's an old man was the only one that fell.
Yes.
And he fell in a really weird way. We're going to talk about the old man and the green jogger in a little while.
Yeah.
But the way he fell is the most noticeable part after the explosion. You see, you're watching the video.
It does explosion catch your view, yeah, your vision.
Yeah, you're like, explosion. Flags flap. Old man falls really oddly.
Yeah.
And stays on the ground. Why?
Yeah. We discussed this, like, watching that video on a loop. I was watching it myself, you were watching it, and I was going, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Is he? Is that?
What the fuck? Yeah. We'll talk about him in a minute now.
Yeah.
But, like, with the bombs blowing up like that, at that 60-degree angle, that would, like, rip apart everything that's above it for about, I'd say, 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever is, like, it'll go outwards.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be like blown up at a parallel to the ground and taking off the bottoms of people's legs.
Yes.
It's going to be blown up into your chest, into your face.
Yeah.
Like fucking you up pretty much.
Yeah. But and in many directions.
Many directions, but mostly up. So there's no evidence of shrapnel or nails inside this bomb. There's no holes in the hoard. There's no, the flags weren't ripped up. There's no marks on the walls. There's no pieces of device left mangled and burnt like there is from that CNN test on the plywood. And there's just a shiny piece of metal with a small piece of black nylon attached to it. That's the only remnants of that first bomb. And there's a picture of that online. It's a shiny ass piece of bent up metal that looks like it was in some kind of controlled explosion. It doesn't look like it was made from a dirty bomb or some black powder or something. Yeah. It wasn't.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It looks too new. It's like one of those missile pieces or the plane parts that they found in Pennsylvania or they found at the Pentagon. It's like, oh, we found a plane part. And it's like, what part of the plane is that?
The bit?
It's just the bit.
Yeah.
It's on the stuff. It looks mechanical. We found it.
It's a piece of metal. Shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah.
This is a crisp packet.
This is as good as it gets. So, like, that's one of the weird things.
It's hard to stop that stuff. Like, yeah, what rings for me with that stuff is the connection with all the people in that first bomb area after the first bomb, and they have like holes in their clothes and stuff like that.
But no holes in their bodies.
There's no wounds underneath all the holes in their clothes.
It seems like they get dressed up for Halloween. It's like, we need to put holy t-shirts on. We need to
make holes and rips. And people's jeans, like one single line seam ripped all the way up the side. As if, like, if you've ever like ripped someone's jeans, which I have done before, like
they go on the crease line.
They're on a really straight line. Yeah. But like there's no way, like, I don't see how a bomb does such clean rip lines up stuff without people just grabbing it and ripping it themselves.
Maybe it was emergency services trying to get in after wounds.
It could have been, but these are people that are getting up like 10 to 15 seconds after the bomb's gone off.
Yeah, it looks like
the fence have been pulled down.
Yeah, it looks like they're putting on airs and graces, like they're getting ready for a Halloween party real quick.
Yes, that's exactly what it looks like.
Absolutely. A weird story I read, there's the people at the Charles Mark Hotel.
Okay.
So the people at the Charles Mark Hotel, in order to possibly, I don't know, gain notoriety, this is the hotel where the lid of the second bomb was found.
Right.
Right. On the roof of this hotel, they found the lid of the bomb. Right. Okay. And they claim to have been knocked off their feet by the second blast after they left their hotel to investigate. And they've seen 7 or 8 people missing limbs. And this is at the first bomb site.
Right.
Up by the finish line, the Charles Mark.
Right.
So they hear the first bomb, they run out, the second bomb goes off, and they claim to have been knocked off their feet. This second bomb is more than 250 yards away.
Yeah.
It's a small, you know, incendiary device. It's not going to have the blast force to be able to knock you off your feet. Impossible.
Like, yeah.
Not happening.
Not from that distance.
Why are you saying that? And why are you claiming to see 7 or 8 people missing limbs when at that site there wasn't that many people?
Yeah.
Like,
there are a lot of these, like, again, there's a lot of talk online about crisis actors and people who are we talk about this a lot in Sandy Hook, people who would be there kind of faking a connection.
Faking injury.
Yeah, faking injury, faking connection, faking, you know, a dead body, faking connection to a victim, and faking a personality, faking a persona.
Yeah, we had, like, Robbie Parker at Sandy Hook, who was pretending to be the parent of a dead child who was laughing off camera, then, like, getting himself ready, coming on camera, being like,
hyperventilating himself up, yeah.
My daughter. And you're like,
yeah,
okay, dude.
I got no love for that guy.
We have some crazy, like, crisis actors who really go all the way. So one of the most famous or the most photographed crisis actors in this whole situation was Jeff Bauman.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, this is the man you've seen, he ain't got no legs.
Yes.
This is, like, Lieutenant Dan. and it's the guy in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Being
the really famous iconic photo.
Iconic photo taken by an Irishman.
Yeah. Well, I'm a resident of Derry.
Well, Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah. He's Irish. Yeah. I claim them. And took this photo of the cowboy and the guy in the wheelchair and the girl, the Chinese girl, and they're pushing this guy in a wheelchair up the street. Yeah. Completely unnecessarily.
Yeah. In contravention to the way you would treat someone.
Absolutely, with massive blood loss and arterial damage.
Yeah.
Like, he should be dead by rights.
Yes,
he should be dead.
Yeah, he probably should have bled out.
It was also in front of a whole lot of media cameras. Mm-hmm. When there was a whole set of ambulances parked at the medical tent just around the corner.
Yeah.
So,
but hang on, how could they have gotten to them? Like, was this marathon happening like on a road or something like that?
Yeah, it was happening on
just like a street.
Yeah, it was happening.
Oh, you're an outside ambulance down the street.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I read that somewhere.
It's on Boylston Street and just around the corner on Adelaide Street.
Oh, I think that's how it's pronounced.
Adelaide. Just
we'll ask our Australian friends.
We will. Just around the corner, there was a whole bunch of ambulances.
Hmm.
Like,
for the end of the race. Yeah.
Literally, like, 10, 12, 15 ambulances.
I have been to a marathon before. I do see, like, ambulances waiting at the end of them for when the runners arrive.
And yeah.
Usually the ambulances have loads of... By the end of the race, you'll see a couple of people sitting on the ambulance with those tinfoil kind of...
Like at the end of an action movie when it's all calmed down.
Yeah.
When people do high fives and... you know, the hero gets to kiss the girl and stuff.
John McClane gets to ring his wife again.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, honey. But yeah, so Jeff Bowman gets paraded in front of all of these cameras. What's Jeff Bowman's story, Paul?
Jeff Bowman's, it's a tricky one. Now, online what you'll see is some, and I'll put links up to this, some questionable existences for Jeff Bowman. Just to give a quick color on crisis actors, again, we've talked about this before in Sandy Hook, and like, if you have an actual terrorist event, what you're probably not going to see is people pretending to be part of it.
Yeah.
Generally. Now, you might remember the girl who wasn't there, the 9/11 story. Very weird story, but you know, an aberration compared to the amount of people that were caught up in that. It is rare to see in like kind of terrorist events someone running along going, I'm part of this, it did happen to me too. Because if it's a real event, there's a chance to be caught out and there's a chance that you'll be completely vilified, like this girl was. And the girl who wasn't
Enough time of being celebrated.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So what
the
you
girl
see,
who wasn't there essentially is a documentary about a girl who pretends that she had a very close part in the 9/11 disaster. Yeah.
She was in one of the buildings.
She was in one of the buildings.
Her fiance was killed in the other building.
And she escaped, and you know, this was
helped
all.
Helped people out, people helped her.
Yeah. She's of Italian origin, and she was like the head of the 9/11 survivors groups and all this kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
Crazy amounts of involvement. And afterwards, it was found out that she's full of shit.
She made
the whole thing up. Like, yeah.
But there was a period of time where some people knew and some people suspected, and companies that she was talking about like knew information but didn't want to say it. Nobody wanted to out her because you didn't want to be the one to out someone.
Well, it's the same
in a tragedy situation like
that.
It's the
same
as
putting like a child as one of the three deaths in some false flag. So yeah. People won't talk about it because no one wants to doubt the death of a child.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes people call bullshit on this stuff. So
tell us about Jeff.
So,
and his crazy story.
Yeah. Jeff might not actually be Jeff. Jeff might well be Lieutenant Nick Vogt. That's V-O-G-T. Vogt. This is some information I saw online. Now, I haven't been able to check this up too much. But I did see a bit of a kind of a put together. And what we said in the start of the intro of this was there's a lot of kind of amateur investigators out there kind of putting their own information together and posting this stuff on forums and conspiracy boards, stuff like that. And
you do get a lot of shite. That's what we always
say. You do get a lot of shite, yeah, yeah. But what this person seems to have is photos of this Lieutenant Nick Vogt who lost his legs in the war in Iraq as a serving military personnel, a lieutenant, in Kandahar in a battle. And it shows him back in 2011 in a military hospital.
Had he got legs?
No, he hadn't. He
had no
legs. No legs. And no left pinky. No pinky on his left hand. No little finger. And then what you see in the Boston bombing videos, when you see Jeff Bowman lying there on the ground, it kind of looks like he has no pinky on his left hand. Now here's the weird thing,
right? Nick?
Could it be Nick Vogt? Now here's the weird thing. When he's photographed again later, Jeff Bowman, he does have a pinky on his left hand. It's an odd one. That one I haven't been able to check up too much, and the disappearing, reappearing pinky is an odd thing. And if the actor who...
Well, if he's able to fake having legs for an hour until they get, inverted commas, blown off, I'm sure that he can, you know...
But I mean, why they would have like a fake, you know, an amputee playing, you know, the role of him there at the bombing, and then have a different guy playing him in the hospital is...
Well, there was a moderately famous guy from Wexford called Darren Busher, mm-hmm. who famously tried to jump on top of a train one night on the way home from the pub, and the train ended up running over him, and he lost an arm and two legs.
Jesus.
And he was kind of like a local celebrity, or whatever. At the time, everybody knew him. And when Steven Spielberg rolled into town to make Saving Private Ryan, a lot of the landing scenes were done in Curraclough Beach in Wexford.
Right.
And guess who they hired on to be one of these people that was lying on the beach, writing and screaming with like bits of stringy flesh and blood and bone hanging out of them, that who were already very prepared for the role.
Yes.
And no CGI was necessary. Darren Busher got a lovely job there for the summer, you know.
There you go.
If you're looking for someone to play somebody that has no legs, you should probably start off with someone that has no legs. The CGI in Forrest Gump was, I'm sure, very expensive and tedious to rub out
for Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise's legs for the whole movie, you know. It'd be easier if Nick Voight had no legs and then he's playing
this person,
Jeff Bauman, or whoever this guy is.
Jeff Bauman, like, he's a very famous person. Obviously, he's the guy in the wheelchair, that iconic photo. He's also at the center of possibly the fake prosthetic question. So Jeff Bauman's the guy you see that when the explosion happens, he's then lying on the ground. He's wearing kind of a grey baseball style shirt, so grey with darker grey kind of sleeves, and he's lying on the ground, and on top of him is a lady in a red coat, and she's just kind of like lying on top of him, kind of covering his lower half, and then covering his feet, and kind of kneeling up, looming above him and the woman, is another gentleman wearing kind of a black overcoat and a grey hoodie underneath. This gentleman kind of proceeds to kind of grab his leg and kind of fiddle with it, the left leg, the one with the, like, both legs were amputated, both legs lost legs, but the left leg had a big long bone kind of protruding at the end of it, the tibia, I guess. And he's kind of fiddling with this leg, the guy in the grey hoodie. He then kind of stops for a second, I guess, possibly applying a tourniquet to keep his femoral artery from bleeding out and from dying in less than 4 minutes. He stops kind of halfway through, though, to put sunglasses on. Once he's finished...
Are you serious?
This is a hero. This is a guy that was trying to save another guy's life. He was bleeding to death on the street in front of him after a bombing.
But he wanted to look cool when he was doing it.
Yeah, you got to respect that too. You got to respect both his empathy and his love to help.
He didn't want to get the arterial spray in his eyes,
His screw you, the world. I'm going to look cool whether this guy dies or not.
That's so weird.
He puts his sunglasses on. And then what's really weird is, of these three, what you see is the lady who appears to have no injuries later gets taken away with a bit more blood on her, but she had no blood on her after the explosion, gets taken away in a stretcher. The gentleman with the grey hoodie then proceeds to kind of like lay down on the ground, and as you describe, kind of like legs crossed, kind of one arm cocked up on his elbow in a very relaxed kind of position, but again with a bit more kind of blood on him, but just, you know, kind of dabbed here and there, no kind of, as I said, arterial spray kind of blood.
No serious
kind of arcing sprays like you would see, just kind of like bits of smeared blood, which and here's the problem with this scene, is that you see a lot of kind of smeared blood even on the ground. The blood is smeared and sticky across the ground, but anyway. So the female with seemingly no injuries leaves on the stretcher. Poor Jeff, who's missing both of his legs, gets propped up into a wheelchair,
lifted up
onto a wheelchair
by one man, apparently.
Carlos Aradon
claims that he lifted him up alone. There is footage of him being helped in by two other people as well as Carlos,
and there is footage of you know, continuing from the moment the bomb happened up to, like, kind of the aftermath was completed. And what you see is a lot of Carlos kind of like walking around, talking to a guy. He picks up something off the ground, puts it in his pocket,
has a flag
that he's waving around,
wipes on the ground so he gets nice blood on it, blood, so he can show it to the news media.
He does help pull down the hoardings with the police and the National Guard
instead of doing what he claims that he did, which is leap over the fence and immediately start helping Jeff Bauman, because he looked like the most injured.
Yes, because he was there as a medical personnel, as a John of God.
So he says later on, so he's part of the Red Cross.
Yes. He was wearing kind of one kind of large lanyard ID.
Which was dark blue in colour.
At the time when he was filmed.
He's pictured changing the ID on this black lanyard to...
Yeah, he's pictured picking up a different ID off the ground.
Yeah.
And then kind of fiddling with it. And then later, he's seen with the same ID.
Showing it to the news, going on part of the Red Cross.
With his picture kind of stuck in it.
So let's talk about Carlos Arredondo then.
Let's leave Jeff to his own devices for a moment. Jeff will come back into it later. And let's move on to Carlos.
He is one of the most intriguing characters about this.
He really is.
Carlos Arredondo is from Costa Rica, a native of Costa Rica, who was smuggled into the US and later granted a green card in exchange for giving evidence that led to the conviction of the people who smuggled him into the US. That is a great start.
Yes.
And it is the American dream.
Yes.
That's a great start to his, citizenship.
Yeah, it's not about getting your lick at the brass ring. It's about making sure somebody else doesn't get theirs.
Yeah.
While you get
yours. Fuck you for bringing me in, and thanks.
Yeah.
So, Carlos was basically the media darling. His story is basically he immediately helped Jeff Bell when he'd lost both of his legs and his femoral arteries were severed, which means he only had minutes to live. So Carlos had to act really quickly, jump in over the fence, put the tourniquet, which he mispronounces as tournament. And while he's talking to the news media, doesn't even know the word tourniquet for someone who works for the Red Cross. Which is really strange.
Yeah.
His English. His English speaking ex wife is the one that has to say tourniquet. And he's like, yeah, tourniquet? What did you say? Like, he doesn't even know the word.
And she's quite the cuckolder, isn't she?
I make tie knot.
Yeah.
And it's all good, man. I make tie knot and he's all good. Like, very weird dude, and he has a really strange background. So
not the only fake sounding Spanish accent, by the way, in this. There's a great interview, I'll be throwing it up on the website, of a bystander getting interviewed about having met Tamerlan 2 weeks before the bombing and how Tamerlan was acting nervous and biting his fingernails, which led him to believe that he
that's really weird. He looks like a skater guy who has like a beard, massive Stevie Wonder glasses,
trying to hide his face, won't look at the camera, and uses the fakest South American accent you've ever heard.
To me, it didn't sound like Spanishy. It sounded like a Brazilian, maybe.
You think?
Yeah.
I think it just all sounded fake. I think he was putting on a fake persona.
It's as good as any of the accents we do here, I think.
But back to Carlos Arredondo.
So, Carlos Arredondo said he jumped in, leapt over the fence, and ran straight to Jeff Bellman's aid. He hung around the scene, is what he did. Yeah. He scaled the fence, and then he helped with the removal of the fence, and then he stand around some more, and then he's being instructed by a man in a yellow jacket who's supposed to be instructing people. Maybe it was his handler.
And the whole time, never let go of this American flag.
Had a little American flag, put it in his pocket, put it on the ground, lifted it back up again, rolled it up, had it in his hand, and then he's just standing around pulling his plum, doing nothing, until a guy in a yellow jacket comes over to him and goes, "Hey, bro, you're supposed to be helping this boy with no legs over here."
Yeah.
And Carlos is like, "Oh, okay, no, I'll go do that then." But he had to wait until the fake bone was put into the stump of Jeff Bowman. So when you see this picture, there's like, I'd say at least a 4 or maybe 5 inch shin bone that's coming out of the leg. So the flesh obviously was torn off, blown clean off this clean bone.
Yeah, very strange.
Really, from like a small incendiary device that had nails and ball bearings and stuff in it. He was so close to it that it just went splash and like completely sheared the meat off the bone.
Yeah, and what you see is like a ridiculous amount of kind of weird bits of flesh and dangly tentacles kind of hanging out.
But only from the stump bit. The bone part is completely clean.
Yeah, it's
and there's no feet.
Yeah.
Normally, like, so it wouldn't blow the feet clean off unless his legs were directly over the bomb and it exploded.
Yeah, there should be something really hanging. There should be some chunks of flesh hanging somewhere.
Yeah.
And what's strange is that, like, the shrapnel, I'm guessing, has managed to clear off all of this flesh, but has left no marks in the bone.
Yeah.
That's very, very specific shrapnel.
Yeah, it's like one of those microwave weapons that just destroy organic material and leave all the buildings intact. He held onto this US flag, right, for dear life. So he could have it for doing the wheelchair parade, which is what I call what they do. We run up and down the street in front of the cameras, right?
Yeah.
And this was later covered in blood. Because he was like, he had it, it was grand. Then he was dealing with Jeff Bowman. And then he started showing this like bloody flag to the news media, holding out with his big sad face on him. Just such weird actions from this guy. And then Then comes the fucked up, strange interviews that he took part in. He claims to be a member of the Red Cross, and he shows his badge. Even after the melee is over, he's like, yeah, I was a member of the Red Cross. And we've seen him, we've mentioned him, bending over in the middle
and
of the...
taking the badge and altering it.
The fucking badge and changing what he had, right? He claims that Jeff's shirt was on fire. He says this in like 5 different interviews.
Yeah.
As if it was a learned script.
Yeah.
That maybe his shirt was supposed to be on fire. There is a black mark in the shirt, but we don't see it on fire. We don't see signs of fire damage or a burn on Jeff.
Yeah.
Even in an interview the following December, so like 7 or 8 months later, he's saying, yeah, his shirt was on fire the exact same way. Where have we seen this kind of thing before? A script rehashed and perpetuated. Where did we see this thing before?
10 different interviews, but given all the exact same way with the same amount of like uncontrollable rising emotions.
Yeah, almost the intonation's identical.
Yeah.
We've seen this in a false flag operation before. 10 points to anybody who can tell us.
This sounds to me like another incarnation of Sweet Gene Rosen.
Sweet Gene in a bottle. Oh, sweet. Like, definitely Sweet Gene.
Yeah. This Part guy is... This
sweet
guy is,
Gene Arredondo.
Yeah, he's the cheaper, non-legal Sweet Gene.
Caliente Carlos Arredondo. That's what he is.
This guy's ridiculous. Look, there's one clip of him and the wife on the radio, and they're like, Carlos, have you spoken to Jeff Bauman or his family at all since the incident happened? And he says, no, I have not. And his wife goes, no, Carlos, do you remember we spoke to Jeff this morning? He said his recovery's going well. Yes, that happened. Like, it's ridiculous.
Redonk.
Yeah. The guy's like,
I
think he's almost even funnier than Gene Rosen.
He's so
because there's a part with Gene Rosen that makes you so angry. There's not really a part that's making me angry about this guy. He's just so ridiculous. Yeah. I'm glad he exists to
at
be
least
that
when you're
ridiculous.
Looking at Gene, you think this guy knows what he's doing. What a cunt for doing.
Yes, exactly. He's smart enough to know how disgusting his actions are.
I think Carlos is just told, say this and we give you those money. He's like, okay.
Yeah. Carlos is too dumb to not know that he's not saving the world.
His famous cowboy hat changed as the marathon day went on. Would you believe this? There's pictures of him early in the day with a cowboy hat that's suede, full suede, beige Jesus. Cowboy hat that has Costa Rica written on the ribbon of it, right?
Right, he borrowed that from George Michael, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
And when you have George Michael's hat on, you know, you want to just go outside. You just want to go outside. It had Costa Rica on this ribbon. And then it changed later on in the day to a straw hat. So you see him with the straw hat with nothing written on it. And then as he was running past the cameras and doing all that stuff, someone had obviously given him his original hat back with the Costa Rica taken off it.
Right. So
and it was just
the
plain
suede.
Original beige suede hat.
Right. I did see him in a straw hat for a while. I remember thinking they were weird photos.
And this hat he has worn in every interview and has it all. Like he went on Costa Rican TV. He went home to Costa Rica almost immediately after the bomb.
Yes. Yeah, to be celebrated.
To be celebrated as a hero, right? And his grey jumper also when he was running past the news media was covered in blood. The right arm was covered in blood.
Yeah.
Where... at the scene when he was putting the bleeding Jeff Bauman into the wheelchair, he should have been covered in blood then from like arterial spray that wasn't tourniquet.
There was none. Yet. And again, if you look at that photo, it seems like no drops of blood going up the street. You can see the hole up the street behind the wheelchair where it was wheeled down the street, not a drop of blood has
and
gone.
And the amount of time that's taken, like, Carlos is standing around looking at his fucking watch, looking at this, looking at that, like a fucking messer, doing nothing. And by the time he gets his shit together, Jeff Bauman should be dead by his injuries.
Yeah.
Like, definitely should be dead.
Yeah.
But he has a really strange history, Paul. And
he does.
When I was
it's
looking up
really
this stuff,
weird.
It was really odd.
Yeah.
Right? So, Carlos Arredondo had a son that died.
Yes, this is very sad.
In Iraq?
In the Iraq War, 2004.
In Iraq, right? So, the Marines, when they came to his house to inform him of this, they came in a minivan, right? And Carlos flipped out and he went and got some... paraffin or he went and got some gasoline from the shed and he said, get out of here, I don't want you here. And they were like, okay, we're afraid that you're going to do something crazy, we have to wait till your wife comes home. He's like, get out of here. I said, no, you have to wait. He set fire to the van that the three Marines came in.
Get out of here. They said, no, we want to stay and tell your wife, we're not certain that you speak good enough English to tell your wife.
Well,
not that.
They said that they were afraid he was going to harm himself or others with the sad news and they had to wait till his wife came home.
And he said, if you don't go, I make it so you can't go.
Yeah. and he burnt her fucking van up. And there's pictures of it. And he was like,
brought gasoline, 3 liters of gasoline and a propane burner type.
He was kind of let off with it because he was like, okay, well.
According to him, he tells the story,
the same story with the same lines and all these interviews before the Boston bomb, and he's in interviews on TV going, yeah, I burned up this van, like, sorry.
He had gained a tiny bit of notoriety through being this, like, this news story kind of broke about, father of war veteran tries to self-immolate.
This is where the story changes after a few years.
The story kind of changed, yeah.
Yeah, he says, like, after, he was kind of like a victim of, like, a post-traumatic stress
episode.
Yeah. So he tried to burn down the van, right? But the story was changed after a few years, saying that, yeah, he tried to kill himself when he found out that his son was killed in Iraq. It was an active suicide attempt. And could this be the incident that introduced him to the FBI or the CIA for use in Boston as like a kind of an agent, a media agent? Because the media loved this story.
Yeah. This really picked up like 15 minutes of fame for him.
Yeah,
this,
absolutely.
He got his taste in 2004, 2005.
Loads of videos of him pre-Boston
giving the
Sally about like what he did to the guys in the van, and he really like drags out the thing. It's like, I was feeling so sad and I just wanted to kill myself, and it's like, well, that's what you were saying at the start, dude. You've been taught to say that because first, it makes a much better news story.
Yeah, and it'll make you get away with the crime better. At first, when you're trying to get away with the crime, you said that, oh, it was an accident and I set fire to my legs by accident and I tried to pull it out.
Yeah, he got like second degree burns like on 25% of his body. It was pretty serious. Like,
yeah.
I was thinking when I was watching that he was made be the cowboy guy from the Boston bombings as a payment for wrecking the van, and basically like it's a federal crime to fuck around with, like, CIA or FBI.
So they came
agents.
To him and they said, Carlos, we need you to do something for us,
and
or you're going to go to jail
for the shit you did with that van. And he's like, okay,
what do you want me to do? Like, we want you to be a hero, Carlos, and make a lot of money out of the situation.
Yeah,
okay, Carlos, we'll do this. We're
going to put up a lot of interviews. We're going to have like a Carlos Arredondo article with basically all the info and all the crazy shit. But he's definitely one of these people.
His story gets a bit darker though. Like after this 2004 incident with the son, then his other son commits suicide.
Yeah,
and this other son lived with the mother that he was estranged from, not him and the wife. And him and the wife, now this sounds really harsh because the guy's son, his first son dies in Iraq, his second son commits suicide. But here's what I see. The guy goes on TV and then starts selling this story of how, you know, his son was like him and he you know, he does all these things to honor his son and blah, 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 blah. His son killed himself because of him setting fire to himself.
And the suicide story that Carlos perpetuated was like, I couldn't live without my son.
Yeah.
So his other son was obviously feeling a bit rejected
from that. And he didn't live with Carlos. Also, like, it's funny to see, like, Carlos's wife, but who's not the mother of the son, but his wife talking about how the son, the soldier and the other one had all the traits, that she has and things. And it's like, well, you're not related to them, really. It's a strange one. The two of them
by marriage.
Yeah, they looked to be like a pair of Gene Rosens, like just hooring themselves out. Yeah, for
everything. And when the Boston stuff hit, he was on every news report, every morning show, Costa Rican TV, like loads and loads of news appearances on the day. He was ready to be like interviewed all day long on camera, showing his hat, showing the blood on his sleeve, like telling the story again and again and again, as if the more he told it, the more it would be true.
Yeah.
Like, who has that time after such an event to be standing around being hammed up by cameras and then being all over the 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 9 o'clock, midnight news, morning news show? He's on like ABC sitting with Katie Couric going like, so I pick him up all by myself. And he's like, well, you didn't. And there's fucking video of you not doing that.
Yeah.
And then I tie his arteries. No, you didn't do that either. There's video of you not doing that. Like, he doesn't even know what tourniquet is. Calls it a tournament. Like, this guy is fucked. He's fucked up in the head, right?
Yeah. But see, it's funny you should say interview there, because Carlos did an interview at the Boston Marathon. The year before.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He ran the year before. He ran with his dead son's boots. From the army. He actually was stopped at the finish line by a local Boston reporter who did a quick kind of interview with him about why he was carrying the boots and what he was there for. Now, he stopped by a local Boston reporter and he's questioned about what he's doing in the race, why he's holding the boots, everything like that. That local Boston reporter is a man named Steve Silva.
No way.
Yes. Well, there's no way.
Steve Silva.
Is you've this heard that guy? Name before?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Steve Silva interviewed Carlos in 2012 at the finish line of the Boston Marathon, where the bomb went off actually the next year, weirdly enough. Steve Silva is also the guy that filmed the incredible footage that we keep talking about, which is this footage right as the bomb catches the bomb explosion at the finish line, kind of moves in towards it, moves away from it, moves towards it, moves away from it, looks up the sky, looks at the flags, looks at the Boston sign.
Sees the old man falling.
Sees the old man falls down, shoots down the street, looks at the back of some cops, looks at the back of some other cops, looks out up the street, looks down at the ground, looks up the sky, looks down at the ground, looks at the flags, looks down at the ground again, looks at the back of a cop, then goes to the area, sees a bunch of cameramen kind of stuffed into the area ahead of this cameraman. People leave the area, those cameramen leave the area.
Like he didn't go to the bomb area immediately.
No. This is kind of the general sway of this video. It's kind of all over the place, basically. Yeah. And for a professional news reporter who's been to that marathon before taking video, a really bad job.
You can even time how long it takes to set up that crime scene by Silva's video.
Yes.
You can go
you can hear him narrating it.
It takes 90 seconds for everybody to get in position. But we do have a set of stills from other people's cameras of people taking pictures of, it's like blank scene.
Blank scene.
One dude. Two cops, more people.
Yeah.
Five guys lying down.
Yeah.
10 guys lying down. 35 people. Woman with a bag full of blood walking around in circles, dumping blood on everybody.
Yeah.
Full ready scene. It's almost like a setup for a stage play or something like that. Like everyone in positions. Okay, curtain up. And Silva, go.
Yeah. So this is Steve Silva. He's the sports editor for the Boston Globe newspaper. And as a sports editor, he's covering the Boston Marathon.
But did we not hear of him? Did we not hear of him in 9/11 as well?
We did. We actually covered him in 9/11 a little bit. So Steve gets this incredibly bad video of the explosion happens. But just, you know, not lucky that he was there. He works for the Boston Globe. He's the Globe reporter. He would be there.
Yeah.
Just lucky he happened to be at the finish line at that time when it went off and actually live filming, because he films kind of a few seconds before the bomb goes off, and then from then on, just lucky he pulled the camera out and started filming that exact moment the bomb went off.
He was filming somebody crossing the finish line.
Pure blind coincidence.
He also gets what we're going to talk about in a few minutes now, the green jogger throwing her bit to the old man who falls weirdly. That's probably the best resolution that you can
see it in his video. But Steve Silva, you know, you could suggest that he got lucky at catching this incredible footage at the Boston Marathon, but in my opinion, he doesn't do a very good job of getting actual footage of the area.
He gets a really good job.
He kind of circles around for a while before he gets the area.
He does a really good job of letting the people set up before he films them, though.
Yeah, but Steve Silva's done a better job of spotting incredible events. On September 11, 2001, Steve Silva was in New York City, as you would expect, a Boston Globe reporter. But he was in Manhattan this time. And he was standing in front of the World Trade Center towers. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're not there anymore now. So he was watching one of those, and he was actually taking photographs of it, weirdly enough. And a plane hit it.
He was there to see the first plane
hit. He saw the first plane hit. You'd know that because Steve Silva was one of the first eyewitness reports on like CNN, ABC, all those.
One of the talking heads that they get to see what happens.
Yes, and he's quite famous. I think if you saw the clip again, and we'll stick it up, the clip of him talking on 9/11... I think you'll remember him. He's the guy that says, "Oh no, I think it was a passenger. Oh, I didn't hear anything about it. Yeah, I just happened to be in New York and I looked up and I saw this first plane hit, and I'm a photographer, so I took a few shots of it. Like, yeah, just really lucky, blah blah blah." And you kind of think, wow, that guy was really lucky.
Really lucky.
That's amazing. And then 12 years passes and you think, that guy's full of shit.
Yeah.
I mean, 2001, I thought, Jesus, that guy was so... I remember seeing that news story. I remember hearing that guy talking about it, like doing the interview. I remember thinking, geez, that guy is one of the few people that actually saw that first plane going to the building. I took a photograph.
Priceless footage.
That's crazy. Very famous photograph they took.
Speaking of famous photographs.
Yeah.
Charles Krupa.
Yes.
This is the Dairyman.
Let's skip on to the Dairyman we were talking about earlier.
That's Steve Silva. We're going to put that up on. That's on the website. That guy's fucked.
Yeah, that guy's... That's just a coincidence, okay? Yeah, what we've talked about tonight is about... Where are we at? Like 18 or 19? Weird coincidences? So far. Yeah, so...
We're definitely up in high double figures.
Yeah, we'll say Steve Silva. Let's go low. Let's say he's the 15th weird coincidence we've come across so far. Number 16. So we're on to Charles Krupa. Charles Krupa is a photographer. He's American, but he lives in Derry in Ireland. And he's a freelance photographer, but he mainly works for the Associated Press. He was there. He took the iconic photo.
A photo that encapsulates the whole thematic gravitas and disaster reaction of the Boston bombing.
Yes, Carlos Arredondo and Jeff Bauman in the wheelchair. Carlos pinching off the artery. Jeff, you know, clenching as hard as he can so he doesn't drop any blood anywhere. That's how that works, right? If your legs blow off, you just clench really hard. Clenched. The blood stays
like
inside
a sphincter.
You. Yeah, is it? Yeah, your legs are like giant sphincters. All the muscles in your leg. Is that what it is?
So, how did Charles get such a picture?
He was just lucky. He was happy to go. He's with the Associated Press. He just happened to be assigned to go to the Boston Marathon and take photos. And just in that moment, he just happened to be there and take that photo and get a great photo. You know, have it framed well, have it formed well.
So where's the catch? Is there a catch?
Not much of a catch there. That's, you know, just a coincidence he happened to be there on the day and caught that photo.
Of Carlos Arredondo,
yeah. Here's another weird coincidence about Charles Cooper. In 2004, Charles Cooper was at a memorial for a young serviceman that had been killed in Iraq. He interviewed a gentleman there, a Costa Rican gentleman there. Not American, Costa Rican gentleman there, and got photos with him. That gentleman's name was Carlos Arredondo. 2004. Anyway, that doesn't matter. That was a coincidence. He was coincidentally there.
That guy wearing a cowboy hat?
Yeah. So in 2006, coincidentally, Charles Cooper is also at this kind of... He's been assigned by the Associated Press to go to this US citizenship ceremony.
Mm.
So it's all these non-nationals who've applied for American citizenship, granted his green cards. Yeah. And this is, you know, the proudest day of their life. Going to an American citizen, the dream is now. He actually takes a photo that's printed in the local newspaper.
What's the name of the guy in the photo?
In Charles Cooper's photo in 2006. The guy that's getting his American citizenship.
Yeah.
The Costa Rican citizen that's changing to American citizenship.
Yeah, what is it?
It's a Carlos. Let me see if I pronounce this correctly. Arredondo. Arredondo. Yeah, that's it. So, it seems that Charles Cooper and Carlos Arredondo should be good friends because they've known each other for over 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
But apparently not, because apparently every time they meet in these crazy situations, like a photograph's taken, hands are shaking, what's your name, let me take your details, that kind of thing. They just don't seem to know each other. Except Charles Cooper later says he when he saw him that day. So sees him in 2004 at a memorial, sees him in 2006, uses his photos both times for selling them for the Associated Press. Like they're the chosen photos that he puts forward of Carlos Arredondo. Then meets him again in 2013, but this time with the Boston bombings, takes that iconic photo. And then does an interview afterwards where he's asked, don't you think it's strange, this incredible connection? We put that interview on the website. This incredible connection that you have with this man. And he said, you know what? I did think it was weird. I remember like seeing the guy and taking the photo. And then my friend who was with me said, hey, that guy looks kind of familiar. Don't you know him? And then I went, oh, wait, I do. I think I took a photo of him in 2004 at an event for
and then
2006, remembered taking a photo of him at a citizenship ceremony. In Texas, I believe it was.
That shit is fucking bananas, man.
Well, it's a coincidence. I don't know why, like, dude.
Well, let's go.
You're one of those conspiracy theorists who see connections in everything.
Yeah, and it's pretty coincidental. Let's go to Erica Branick.
Erica Branick. Okay, so now we're on to victims. We're on to straight up victims here. These are people who've had limbs lost to this event.
This is the woman that's sitting beside Jeff.
This is the blonde woman, in kind of the red gilet, if you will, who's sitting beside Jeff Bauman, kind of sitting on her butt with her kind of legs up and her hands back. Bracing herself.
Pretty casually
sitting up. Again, kind of like sitting in a park, maybe watching one of those, they put those big projector screens up and play a summer movie in the park, that kind of thing. Kind of a real shocked look on her face, doesn't know what's going on. She's got like a bit of dirt or maybe a small cut on the back of her sock, kind of on her left Achilles tendon, and then maybe like a small dribble of blood going down, but seeming to emanate from nowhere on her right leg. She's wearing those kind of like half-sized jogging trousers that just barely go over the knee. Doesn't seem to be too injured. It later turns out she's on the news, and it later turns out her Achilles tendon was like severely severed on her left foot. She nearly lost that foot.
Right.
On her right leg, both her fibia and her tibia was broken. You believe that?
Wow. And she was just sitting there. Just
sitting there chilling, like keeping it real, just kicking back, you know what I mean, taking it easy.
Wasn't like screaming like a footballer who's got a really bad tackle and smashed her ankles. Or
she was maybe thinking like about her sister who was lying on the ground beside her missing a leg. Maybe, but I don't know, she didn't turn around to look, so.
Is there pictures of her sister having a leg beforehand?
Not that I could find. In fact...
What's her sister's name?
Her sister's name is... Oh, sorry, that is Erica Branick we're talking about. This is Erica Branick we're talking about. Her sister... Nicole Branick Gross we're talking about now. Okay. Nicole Branick Gross is the blonde one who's sitting there...
With the Achilles tendon.
With the Achilles tendon. Behind her Not making a peep. Behind her is her sister, Erica Branick, who's
lost a leg.
She's like lying kind of almost head to foot, well, missing foot, with Jeff Bowman.
And she has this
very small
Nicola
area.
Bellic has
small
loads of holes in her clothes, but no blood or cuts or any damage from like flying ball bearings.
Erica Branagh has a leg missing. She's lying beside Jeff Bowman, has a leg missing. There's another person with a leg missing lying close to them. There's not a huge amount of blood on the ground between them. And what blood there is seems to be very oddly coloured. It seems to be sticking to the ground and smeared kind of strangely. Nobody particularly writhing or screaming.
That's so funny.
Very odd. Very odd situation.
What about Sydney Corcoran?
Sydney Corcoran was the girl that was lying in front of the Adidas sign.
One of the other very famous injured people. Parties.
Yeah, yeah. So Sydney Corcoran, you spoke earlier about the woman who was seen walking around kind of dropping blood out of a handbag the whole time.
Yeah, that was part of a set of pictures. There was one part of that picture was a man picking up a device and absconding with it. And the other part of that is a woman dribbling blood out of her handbag out of presumably some kind of a plasma bag.
Sydney Corcoran nearly lost her leg.
Right.
So bad was a cut deep into her thigh, severing her femoral artery. Mm. So bad was this cut, she was barely able to move. I mean, she was able to get up after it happened and then walk around and spreading blood around the place for a while. But then she went over the other side of the hoardings and laid down on the ground where she was attended to.
Maybe she didn't realise how bad she was.
That's probably what it was. Her adrenaline was causing her femoral artery to pump into her handbag and she's walking around and then just spilling it to the corners of her handbag. Is that what
she was doing?
Yeah.
She was holding on her handbag for later.
Yeah, I'm glad we stopped looking for weird coincidences and started going with the facts.
What about Bill and Mary Jo White?
Bill and Mary Jo White are the older couple that you can see. So they're both wearing kind of red gilets kind of things, black trousers. Mary Jo, unfortunately, after the blast, she's the one seen. She has a very iconic photo too in a wheelchair being wheeled away. She has blood all smeared down her face, and her legs are covered in blood. Her trousers are all ripped up to her thighs, her old thighs. So after the blast, she's seen sitting on the ground, kind of, well, no blood in her basically, but she's sitting on the ground
comfortably
enough.
Same
position as the rest of them, on her butt with her hands behind her back, her knees up.
Good old knees up.
Seems to have some sort of red kind of rectangular pack in her hand, and then this goes up to her head, and then suddenly her face starts becoming covered in blood, and then drips and puddles start appearing on her sides.
There is a video.
Well, it's actually photos. It's photos taken from a second floor window down onto the area, and as you said, there's a Flickr account of this where you can see them all in a slideshow.
So she's basically caught rotten. Like.
She's caught rotten. There's a photo taken like someone's just holding down the shoot button on their camera phone, so or their camera, so it's it's taking a photo every second and a half. So
she is dot cotton, caught
Her husband, Bill, lost his leg. Another one of the amputee victims
before the bombing, obviously,
probably. So Bill's kind of like lying there, and again, what you see is like even longer than it takes for her to start dripping blood around the place. He's not dripping any blood. There's no sign of blood anywhere. He's actually, weirdly enough, his leg that's apparently been blown off is lying on top of a piece of newspaper.
And is it the newspaper from like 2001 depicting the fall of the Twin Towers?
No, it's not.
That's a bit of a stretch, isn't
it? That was a little bit of a stretch, yeah. We're never going to go with something that crazy. Or are we?
Oh, well.
Yeah, but his amputated leg, or his blown off leg is lying on top of a new piece of newspaper. That's nice and white. Until Bill kind of like reaches down towards it. And then at which point, just there's not like dribbles of blood or a spray of blood. There's just an immediate puddle splat.
See?
Yeah, of blood just kind
small
of
leg.
Rushes out from his leg immediately. Yeah, I feel for them a little bit.
Because they had to sit on the cold ground and they might get piles because they're old.
Yes, there is that. But there's the other issue whereby I did a research, and if you go to their youcaring.com page, you can actually make a donation to Bill and Mary Jo White if you'd like. Their donations are sitting at...
these people making money?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Their donations so far on youcaring.com are sitting at $85,543. If you'd like to pledge some money to them, please do. And you might think, oh, they've got $85,000. Why would I give them any money? Well, wait, I'll tell you how much money the rest of them have.
Let's go
through some people. Sydney Corcoran, the girl who who nearly lost her leg with the shrapnel.
This is the blood bag lady.
Yeah, her mother Celeste was also injured in the blast, and the two of them have a joint GoFundMe.com account. So far they've raised $795,054. That's
from people donating because they're like, oh, the poor people in the Boston bombing.
Mm-hmm. There's Nicole Branagh Gross, who has a private fund at bestrongstaystrong.net. She set up her own like major fund as opposed to using
Kickstarter.
So absolutely no information there. Her sister Erica Branagh set up a private fund also called the Branagh Fund.
Not the Branagh Gross Fund.
No, the BranaghFund.com. Can't find any details on that of how much money made.
But like, 85,000, if you were told it was 85,000, you'd be like, damn, 85,000, like, for charity, fuck.
Yeah.
For two old people. And then you go, yeah, but I mean, like, Sidney Corcoran, who was just, like, walking around with a bag of blood.
Yeah.
Got 800 grand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but we have a winner, Jeff Bowman, at GoFundMe.com. It's Jeff Bowman's page. If you want to go there and donate and help him get over the $1 million mark. So far, he's at $809,165
at
our last check. He's doing okay. But to be fair, he had both his legs blown off.
That's too much, like.
That is a decent amount of money.
That's too much money to be having for something like that, man. That's fucking phenomenal. That's taking advantage of people.
It really is.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, just a question of, if these people are crisis actors and people would say, but why would they do this? They'd have to, like, turn their back on their life. They'd have to, like, pretend to be somebody else.
Shit with the money for nothing.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're sitting on the beach in Hawaii.
We're going to start winding this up now, and we're going to go into the false flag evidence. These are all, like, really crazy, crazy chunks of evidence. So, but, like, it's why it's making the show so long. There's so much stuff in it that's pertinent. Like, all those people.
We've had to mention everything we've mentioned so far.
You know?
So, first things first, if you have a terrorist attack, what you're going to find is you have a drill for that exact kind of event running that day.
Well, that's the norm.
That's the norm. You check any event. That's the London bombings.
London bombings. Like, there's a drill happening. All that morning, there was sniffer dogs and boys in full body armor all out at the finish line.
Roof spotters.
Officials were, deflecting questions of these drills for weeks to come. And we've seen it before. Like, we've seen it at Sandy Hook. We've seen, like, assemble here signs and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. At the Boston bombing, they had announcements all morning of stay calm. If anything should happen, don't panic.
It's a drill. Controlled explosions.
It's all good. Don't worry about it. Like, there was announcements. Like, remain calm.
Psyoping hard. There was even a fire at JFK Memorial Library.
A fire at JFK Memorial.
Oh, I wasn't commanding you to fire at JFK.
Yeah, some kind of fucking...
Jeez, I'm not George Bush Senior.
MK Sirhan.
Yeah. There's the JFK Memorial Library, which is about 3.5 miles away from the bomb site. From the marathon site. And down by the Boston Harbor. And that building, they thought about 10:30, had a pretty bad fire. And they thought at first it might have been a terrorist attack.
They threw it out there that it was a terrorist attack.
Yeah, it was released through the press and through Twitter and everything. It seems to have just kind of petered out to nothing or was unsubstantiated. It was a fire, not a huge amount of information about it or how it started, but it was just a fire.
But it was enough to be able to
scare
make a little...
Yeah, a couple of hours before these bombs went off, yeah.
So in all these news reports as well, Al-Qaeda was thrown about. Like, they had absolutely nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
But it was definitely thrown about as a possible suspect. And the first few days were filled with suspicion of Al-Qaeda as they arrested a Saudi man who had links to Al-Qaeda, who had links to allegedly Osama bin Laden. Like, that was what they were thinking. They were trying to put the fear of 9/11 in you, as well as, like, Islamic and Russian terrorists were accused as well. Could this have been the foreshadowing of the ISIS threat?
Mm-hmm.
Or the impending Russian threat that we have now? Like, they're making these Russians the enemy. You know, Chechnyans, ex-Chechnyans, they're ex-Soviets, ex-Russians, like, these boys are the enemy. And then the whole thing is kicking off now with Ukraine and stuff like that. Since, I mean, if you're looking out at, like, false flag evidence, that's kind of one motive to be able to deflect the aggravation and the aggression.
Absolutely, yeah. You know?
Also, we've talked about Sarnaev's mother claiming that it was all fake. The chap is only 26.
Yeah.
And his mother is, like, 100% saying it's a setup. He's a patsy. Like, dropping all of these massive terms like we've known from JFK and 9/11 and stuff like that. Like, patsy, man. This is, like, it's
classic rebellion patsy talk. Stuff.
It's
classic
false flag stuff. Yeah. And I don't even know. I still don't know how she's led on the news to say that shit. Like, do you know?
Yeah. For me, some of the classic false flag stuff that I really enjoy is the kind of slip of tongue kind of stuff. It's very hard to nail down. It's nothing you can kind of sell your house on. But yeah, but that kind of, like,
the Boston Police Commissioner.
Yeah, Boston Police Commissioner Edward Davis.
Yeah.
This is the Commissioner of Police for Boston.
For Boston.
This guy came out and said on TV, we think the two actors that are responsible, suspects that are responsible for this crime, straight up says the word actors. Now again, you can only put so much weight into someone's slip of the tongue or into a Freudian slip. But
definitely if he's being briefed beforehand to be like, okay, we're going to have these two young lads and they're acting as...
And this is also the guy in another press conference where he's asked why he's not prepared to confirm that they were running a drill that day.
Yeah.
He just ignores the reporter and goes, next question.
Ignores it.
And on to the next person.
There's... I've seen it before when I was, like, researching this just for fun. But now that I went to research it for a a particular reason. I couldn't fucking find the video. And it's talking about the B squad.
Mm-hmm.
So the B squad, what I remember of it, mm-hmm. was that there was a whole section at the first bomb site. And all the people that were in the video all have a word on their shirts beginning with the letter B. So all these people came together so that they didn't have to communicate with each other. They didn't know each other previously.
Yeah.
But they were all able to like visually go like, okay, and you're wearing B, okay.
But without cool. all having to be wearing like a bright yellow carnation or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't have to wear anything that was too obvious yeah. or too, you know, deliberate. So it was just like they look and they go, oh yeah, he's wearing a Beckham shirt. Oh yeah, he's wearing a Boston jersey. Oh yeah, he's wearing... So whoever's wearing something that began with B,
yeah.
they were all in on this thing and... The if girl who was narrating the video makes a really good case for this. And the fact that these people were getting in the way of the guy who was filming, they were getting in the way of the police. And there was people taking out like blood packs and putting blood on the ground and stuff yeah. like that. And these people with this B on their jumper were jumping out and like obfuscating the view of the camera. And then they'd get out of the way. And like Paul said, Sidney Corcoran, who was sitting at the Adidas signs in the first bomb site, you know, had people standing in front of her while she was going around and throwing blood on the ground and
yeah.
throwing blood all over herself. I mean, that video, if I can find it, is definitely going up on the website. Like, yeah. that is damning evidence.
Yeah, I saw a thing like, as well about, very, there's a lot of people just
handlers,
that,
like running
yeah,
back
yeah, in that first bomb all. Area, you see a lot of other like handlers. So in Sandy Hook, what we talked about was these people in the area after the attack that seemed to have like clipboards and lanyards that were guiding, you know, the random parents yeah. that were showing up.
I mean, even Arredondo, who's standing around pulling his plum, not knowing what the fuck he's doing,
yeah.
has a guy in a yellow jacket come over
telling
him
what
go,
to do.
Where, that yeah. guy over there, Bowman.
Which here, well, you get a lot of, like I spoke earlier about the guy that was with Bowman that was wearing kind of a black overcoat with a grey hoodie underneath.
He seems like a lot of people, technician like, who was
pink hoodies, yellow hoodies, blue hoodies, but yeah. all black overcoats over the top. It's yeah. it's just odd. It's all coming out. Look, it was a brisk enough day in Boston in April. It's a chance. Everyone's just wearing those for the sake of it. But that's
another thing that would indicate that they're false flags is there was loads of men in black with a lot of black glasses with the hats. We're going to talk a little bit about Craft International.
A lot of guys
talking into devices shortly after the blasts. A lot of guys picking up stuff. There's pictures of guys picking up like bags and weird mechanical devices and absconding with them. One man hides a piece under his jacket. There's very, very definite and deliberate
of tampering with the evidence.
The other two stands guard over the remnants of another device when a man comes over behind and then takes it and then they all disperse. They all have a logo on their jacket or on their hats of this Craft International.
It's
which,
like a skull with crosshairs.
Yeah, it's like a skull that has like four long teeth coming out, like the Punisher logo.
It's very similar. It's like a crosshairs.
And there's loads of these fucking dudes.
Yeah.
Loads.
Yeah.
I mean, if anyone was going to pull off something to be some kind of mercenary...
Yeah.
crowd like that who are, you know, not answerable to anybody. And
these are Craft International employees. Craft International are like Blackwater, also known as XE. This is, if you know these companies, these are mercenary companies. These are like hired mercenaries.
Yeah, you bring them in to do the shit that if an army guy did it, he'd be like brought
martial,
up.
War crimes. Yeah.
War crimes.
So these if you're going to a place, if you're the US and you're going to a place, you privately contract some ex-military so they know how to tell the line properly. And you send them into the country and you give them carte blanche to do whatever the hell they want to get the job done. This is how this operates.
Like the A-team.
Yeah, except evil as fuck. So there was a lot of these dudes kind of seen around this area, all wearing the same matching uniform, all looking the same. And it begs the question of who are Craft International?
Well, we'll talk about Craft International in a second when we go through all the false flag evidence. But Craft International are definitely at the heart of this Boston bombing.
Yeah.
We're looking at like fake blood as evidence of a false flag operation. Fake blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Real weird consistency, like sloppy, sticky, too bright to be blood.
Yeah.
Like not enough where there should be and too much where there shouldn't.
Yeah. There's a nice large photo of Bowman lying on the ground where it looks like there's a tube coming from underneath his buttock to where the big giant bone is sticking out of his leg, and it also looks like all the blood that's sprayed over him on the ground looks to be coming emanating from that kind of area.
Maybe he had like some kind of blood pack attached to his back,
a pump.
The woman that's dispersing Sydney, that's dispersing the blood from her handbag, and there's loads of people doing first aid who are applying blood to the victim's legs and wounds. Yeah.
Passing
blood packs between handlers and stuff like that, passing stuff off, being like, blam, there you go. Yeah. The thing.
Billy and Mary Jo white blood themselves up.
Yeah,
and
actually, a gentleman
standing across from them, he can actually be seen standing up in front of them, and he pulls a blood pack out of his back pocket and just kind of squeezes it and sprays it over the ground.
Yeah, very weird.
Yeah, pretty odd thing to do for a natural event of a terrorist attack, is to spray fake blood on people. And even have it on you is weird.
Like, you'd have to ask yourself, how can all these people keep this thing a secret, you know?
Yeah.
We've talked about how there was nails supposed to be in these nail bombs, ball bearings, nuts, bolts, and all this kind of shit. But the Boston Globe on the 16th states that there was no nails or other fragments in the blast.
Mm.
So was it just powder then? Was it just like a big banger, like a big firework that went off, and there was no incendiary weaponized materials inside of it? It wasn't like, you know, a lot of nuts and bolts and bits of metal.
Yeah,
like,
nails.
People didn't get smashed up or like bore holes. Their clothes had holes.
Yeah.
But they didn't have the holes of where the ball bearings went into them. Like, I mean, we've all seen Jackass and the boys getting shot in the ass with a paintball gun.
Yeah.
And that's a paintball. Can you imagine like a ball bearing flying 100 miles an hour? It's like a bullet. It'll tear a hole through you. Like,
yeah.
So it might even tear your legs off.
Yeah, and ricochet, keep going.
And keep your bones really white and clean.
Yeah.
Like Jeff
Apparently,
Bannon.
Yeah.
On the 16th, a Boston trauma surgeon claims to the news that nails did all the damage. Nails.
Mm.
That there was nails in the bombs and they did all the damage. He got a nice little brown envelope for saying that, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
And the wheelchair parade.
Yeah.
That they call it. It's definitely for the media. There's people running up and down this big, long street. Right? The street where the race had taken place. And they're getting wheelchairs, they're getting gurneys, and they're bringing people from there down to like a medical station when around the corner there's a shitload of ambulances.
Yeah.
They're waiting to pick people up. Yeah. And they have all the gear on the ambulance.
As you expect at the finish line of a major sporting event.
Yeah, like they're trundled up and down the street for hours.
Hmm.
People being taken care of, dragged out in front of the media, getting pictures taken, like Bauman and Arredondo.
Yeah.
Like, iconic shit, like these old women getting up. And there's people, I was watching a video of the whole thing, and majority of those people are just, like, sitting in the chair going, ugh.
But to be fair, though,
I'm so inconvenienced.
Yeah.
Not like I have a load of holes in me from a bomb.
Yeah, but I don't think it's surprising, though, that that picture of Carlos and Bauman is so iconic. I mean, that photographer had 10 years of practicing taking photos of Carlos. He'd want to be good by that. He knows his sides, exactly.
Yeah, it just bangs of Sandy Hook, where it's like, hold back the EMTs.
Yeah.
Because there's actually nothing.
You want the carnage to kind of.
No, there's actually nothing to be fixed here. And if we have a lot of ambulance workers in, we're going to have to silence them up as well.
True, yeah.
And, you know.
We'd rather get these people to the hospital our way in our vehicles and then deal with it from there.
I don't know, man. It's all very false flaggy. Like, that's the kind of the crux of the false flag element. Like, all that information, the stuff we've already talked about. But you have to think of, like, the conspiracy theories that people have put forward for this.
Yeah.
Some of them are mental.
Yeah.
And some of them are kind of a head scratcher. They're kind of like, well, that could happen. Some of them are so weird. Like, there's a 4chan prediction where somebody anonymously goes on 4chan and says that there's going to be a bomb, that they're going to say he used reloading powder, that they're going to say that the powder shouldn't be for sale to the public anymore, and they won't find the suspects till later this week, and the raid is issued to occur on Friday. And that this is a staged event. It said, went up on 4chan, anonymously posted, predicted the Boston bombing and its aftermath correctly, which I think is like somebody that's involved in the whole situation, like a crisis actor or somebody that's, you know, that's not compartmentalized information, that's putting it out to the world and going, you know what? Shit's about to go real right now.
Yeah.
Don't believe what you see on the news or whatever, you know? That's one of the cruxes of the conspiracy theorists that they're able to say, look, if somebody's putting that up a couple of days before and then it comes true, surely it has to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has to be true. The black operatives, you were talking about Kraft International.
Yeah.
So the black operatives that were present is a massive part of the conspiracy theorists. That there's two men in tan cargo pants and black jackets that are claimed to be the perpetrators, and there's pictures of them from every angle, and they have that Kraft International logo on their hats.
Yeah.
So who are Kraft International?
Kraft International, as you said, are a mercenary company. They were founded by, co-founded by a man named Chris Kyle. He designed that skull logo that's got them so caught all the time.
Get back up there.
But Chris Kyle, you may have heard that name before. He's the American sniper.
Does he not play Bradley Cooper in a movie?
He does. Oh, the other way around. Bradley Cooper plays him. But he's the American sniper. He's the man that inspired the movie. The Clint Eastwood directed movie. Bradley Cooper stars as him in the movie. About his exploits as a sniper for the American military and how he killed loads and loads and loads and loads of brown people.
Killed the most amount of people of any soldier in the Iraq War. Is that right?
Yes. High five to him.
Yeah, well done him. And then he decided, hey, you know what? I'm really good at killing stuff.
Yeah.
Let's make a business.
I'm going to fund a company where I'm going to hire people, killers, to do killing. So he did that. And then just befalls a terrible, terrible thing happens to him. About a month before the bombings, 2 months before the bombings, Chris Kyle is killed.
Wow.
Yeah, the American sniper is killed. It turns out that one of his craft employees, he's at a training ground shooting range with one of his craft employees, who obviously as a craft employee was an ex-American military personnel, has a bout of PTSD and kind of freaks out and kills him and the other instructor. And then is arrested and charged, and he's going to trial soon, and he's claiming that he just kind of went insane for a moment and killed him for absolutely no reason. But a couple of months before the bombing, less than 2 months before the bombing,
so
he was killed.
His company is hired on.
Yes.
And there's people from his company present
all over the site. Yeah, you can. We'll put up the links to the photos of the site just after the bomb's gone off. And there's like three teams of two pairs of guys right there, like seconds after the bomb's gone off in that central area. His team were there for some reason. His company were there running something on that day. But he wasn't there to see it. He was killed about 2 months before.
That's really coincidental.
Yeah.
For a fella who survived like four tours of Iraq and whatever.
Yeah.
Like to be killed at a shooting range by some bloke.
Yeah.
Just as you're about to embark on possibly the most important mission that your private mercenary company was about to undertake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe you don't agree with this mission that your company was about to undertake. Maybe you co-founded this company and you feel it's being stolen away from you by taking these shady, even shadier than normal black market deals.
Mm. With these very public displays of power.
With groups that are not even fully the government, just loosely connected to the government. Mm-hmm. You're working with some group just because they have money. See, and he decides he doesn't want to be part of that.
Yeah.
So he gets silenced.
Yeah, see you later, Chris.
Yeah. But I mean, you love your coincidence, do you? Your crazy coincidences.
I do.
Get this one. So, Chris Kyle is played in the movie by...
Bradley Cooper.
And Jeff Bowman is visited in the hospital after his amputation by... Sure. Well, just say the name he said last time again.
Bradley Cooper?
Correct.
No
way.
We'll
be putting that on the website.
No fucking way.
Yeah.
Jeff Bowman.
Bradley gets around.
What?
Bradley the Hangover Cooper. Yeah.
Visits Jeff Bowman for any particular
Jeff
reason.
Did
Jeff Bowman have anything to do with Chris Kyle while they were in the army together?
Who knows? I couldn't find any connection that far. The only thing I can really tell is that... Chris Kyle, the American sniper, founded this craft company. This craft company were there on the ground at the scene when it happened. Chris Kyle was played by Bradley Cooper in the movie. Bradley Cooper visited the most famous victim of the Boston bombings
after. That's still enough links for me to go, what?
That's a pretty weird one, isn't it? I'm not accusing Bradley, if you're listening to this, what the fuck are you doing, man? But
the way you're listening to something else, this is weird.
You obviously have a connection with this of some sort, so why you're listening to a conspiracy podcast about
please
Boston bombings?
Yeah, did you talk to Chris Kyle before he died? Did he confide in you?
Yeah.
Are you the next one to go?
Yeah.
Huh?
Did you go talk to that guy? Did you have to talk to that guy? Like, is your entire career built off lack of acting talent and a connection to the Illuminati?
Well, I have seen him in the audience in behind the actor's studio or whatever. So he did actually go and
study a bit of craft.
He
studied James Lipton.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not a bum off the street. He's
true.
Not like Sylvester Stallone writing his own movie and then wanting to star in it. Like, come on. But sorry, Sylvester Stallone, if you're listening, you're cool, man.
You're a nice guy.
You're cool.
He also visited, now to be fair, he visited Celeste and Sidney Corkin in the hospital as well.
Yeah, but I mean, it's because Kraft International blew their legs off, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they also work for Kraft International's crisis actors.
Yeah, they're all crisis actors, and it's all a part of, it's just like a staff reunion.
Yeah.
I looked up Kraft International, and I thought it was very funny that their motto is, despite what your mama told you, violence does solve problems. That is a really good motto for a
and the Punisher logo
company.
Right there, that sounds like Chris Kyle all over.
I think it just smacks of Operation Northwoods, where it's like, if it looks like it, then it probably is like it.
That dirty, disgusting.
It also smacks of like Cuban missile crisis stuff, and these kind of black operations done by, you know, unnameable mercenaries. It just seems
untraceable dudes. Like, these dudes are going to be protected by the company, and the company, as Blackwater do, just change name and re-register and just rewrite themselves every time they have an incident.
Here's a really weird one then for you, right? I love me coincidences. Here's
okay, go. I think I might have had enough, but go on, one more.
Do you believe when I tell you that the Sandy Hook principal, Donna Hawksprung, the dead Sandy Hook principal, Donna Hawksprung, ran the Boston Marathon that year as
like dead
Donna Bruce,
alive.
What? She is photographed.
What?
After running the 26 miles for Sandy Hook.
Wait, I know something about this. There's a mile marker on every mile of lap of the marathon.
Yeah, for each kid, for each person that died.
The mile markers were dedicated to all the Sandy Hook people.
And she is one of the, Donna Hawksprung is one of the markers.
She ran past a photo of herself in the marathon.
And nobody quigged it.
My goodness.
Yeah. Isn't that shit bananas?
That is bananas.
She's followed after that. She's a crisis actor who was captured on video giving an interview after running as Team Newtown Strong. I think that was heard a lot on all the videos. As Boston Proud, Boston Strong.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff. Boston Strong. So Team Newtown Strong was the team she ran with. And she's photographed and videoed. It's undoubtedly her.
This is
very weird. And they have the same picture on the Sandy Hook news report.
Yeah.
And then they have woman Donna Bruce runs for Sandy Hook.
And it's the same photo used in the
same
obituary report.
Exactly the same photo.
It's the same photo from the obituary report from Sandy Hook.
Exactly the same photo. That's massive oversight. Isn't that crazy? Whoever's doing the Sandy Hook side of those false flags is really slipping.
Yeah.
Really slipping.
Yeah.
People are going, really, Goro, is that really what you're fucking telling me? I'm going to put the thing up on the website.
Yeah.
That shit is bananas. Yeah. We said that in the Sandy Hook episode as well. There was someone from the Boston Bomber. That shit is for reals, yo. And this is the bitch. Donna Bruce or Donna Hawksprung.
Mm.
I know. Okay, so, melts your face.
Yeah.
She's identified as Donna Bruce or Donna Page. And it's the exact same picture that was used in the Sandy Hook death report as this woman just completed 26 miles for Team Sandy Hook, or Team Sandy Hook Strong, or Team Newtown Strong.
Team Newtown Strong.
And I went looking for a debunking of this, and I went to like Snopes, which is like the main debunking website, and they're saying, yeah, can't debunk it. Can't find that in any evidence that says this is not her. And they're the lads who love debunking shit.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
No, I'm trying not to. What I'm imagining is that whoever was behind Sandy Hook botched that so terribly, and whoever was behind Boston got Bradley Cooper to do a cameo.
Yeah.
I know who's better at running these events.
Yeah.
Kraft is way better than whatever team they had running Sandy Hook.
Team Newtown Strong were running.
Team Newtown Strong, yeah. Fucking dear job.
Boston Strong is way better.
There's another thing where Facebook pages
were made before the bombs went off. Now, this is easily debunked.
This happened at Sandy Hook as well.
It happens loads of times, you know, where the times and dates cause controversy. It's basically a page that has been
created into life,
has got loads of likes already, and then they just swap the names and change the profile pictures and the history of all these Facebook pages are all there, but it just looks weird when you go on to, you know, Sandy Hook Memorial Facebook page and then you see that there's a date that it was created before the event happened or whatever in 2010 or whatever. You're like, what? But it's a very simple reason for that. Like, I wouldn't.
Well, there could be. I mean, it's not necessarily the reason.
I wouldn't go too mad into it. The fact that the authorities knew that there was an attack going to come, like, they were pretty prepared. They had a crisis staff, EMTs, that sniffer dogs, that bomb squads,
the classic roof drill, spotters, drill,
like, they had like snipers on the roof getting ready to, you know, take somebody out.
Yeah.
The craft personnel as spotters for the crisis team, perhaps, I don't know. Mm-hmm. They were making announcements for people to keep calm. There was public announcements, news reports and tweets about these controlled explosions. So they had this, like, a bomb is going to go off in the psyche.
Brace yourself, a bomb.
So the JFK library was like, you know, 3.5 miles away, as you said.
Yeah.
But they were kind of just sneaking in a little thing of like, a bomb has gone off. There's a bomb. Like, the word bomb was going around the Boston Marathon already because something had happened at JFK. So people were like, remain calm. So like, the remain calm was like, a bomb has gone off at the JFK library, remain calm. Not when a bomb goes off here, remain calm, it's all good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very subtly done.
Yeah, like as we mentioned in the intro of this episode, like the connections to September 11th and the assassination of JFK. But that wasn't just us putting those on. That's because there actually is like a connection to the assassination of JFK in the fire at the JFK Memorial Library. And there actually is a connection to September 11th with Steve Silver, the man who saw the plane and the man who caught the bomb.
Tangible connections there.
And then also the date that the Sarnia brothers were supposed to have committed a murder in Massachusetts in September 11th, 2011.
Yeah, it's very odd. Very odd. One of the wildest ones that I think, and people really hang on to this because the show is so popular, but the Family Guy particular bombing in an episode there on TV and one before the bomb. Like the name of the episode is Turban Cowboy, where Peter befriends a Muslim who's intent on blowing up the Quahog Bridge. And it's basically like, you know, a bunch of like semi racist jokes about Muslims being terrorists. And then Peter is trying to call Mahmoud is your man's name, he's trying to call him and he tries to call him on the phone. And an explosion goes off and he tries to call him again. Another explosion goes off, which is apparently a prediction of the two explosions. And then at one stage in a cutaway, he wants to win the Boston Marathon. So he gets in his car and he drives through all the people and he leaves in his wake a whole lot of bloody bodies, like missing legs and a load of blood. They say this is because Seth MacFarlane has ties to these Illuminati or these people that organize this thing, he's worth $1 billion. He's got a few pounds. He's definitely in the Masons. He's got some, you know, he's got some shit behind him.
Yeah.
And they're saying like, yeah, dude, you knew about it and you were just making a joke about it. Like this is your job to psyop like all the Family Guy people and keep them busy wondering like, why did you put that in Family Guy?
Yeah, just throw it out there.
Like,
and
really
keep it going.
Weird. Like
this is Seth MacFarlane we're talking about.
Seth MacFarlane, a really weird video.
Yeah.
And the episode was removed from Netflix, Fox.com and Hulu after the bombings, and even YouTube censoring clips from it for ages afterwards. Like, you can get clips of it now, but you can't get the bits where he does the thing with the cell phones and the two bombs, because it was cut in a certain way that made it look like that's how it was written in the show.
Right.
But it wasn't written that way. But, like, MacFarlane went on and said it was abhorrent and, like, how dare you, like, you know, use my material against, you know, my moral structure or whatever. Like, I'd never do this. I'd never say this. This is in totally bad taste. I already
do good taste jokes.
Yeah, I'm taking this down and all this kind of stuff, you know. So, I mean, that's one of the wilder ones.
Mm.
And I saw a very weird little video.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's called The Yellow Balloon Lady.
Okay.
Right. Where the two suspects are kind of being marched through a gauntlet of people along these empty sidewalks, following a lady carrying three yellow balloons. And these boys roll in, and it's the famous, like, Zahar's wearing his 11.
Baseball cap.
The baseball cap has 11 on the side of it. And then Tamerlan has his, like, hat pulled right down and the sunglasses on. And the both of them have backpacks.
Yeah.
And they're rolling in.
Grey and black.
Grey and black backpacks. And a black one. And he's rolling in, and the woman stops. But she kind of drags them past like three different security cameras to make sure, yeah, we definitely got their faces. Definitely. These guys have been placed at the scene. We're making evidence. Like, and this woman's job was to make sure that these boys were seen by cameras by walking them around. Maybe she was their handler. Maybe they knew what was going on. Nobody will know what's going on in Tamerlan and Sarnia's head now because it mashed up all over the fucking road. And then the young lad hasn't broke yet. He hasn't told what's happening, but he's definitely pleading not guilty.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if the case goes to court that all this shit is going to all come out, and hopefully it does. And if it's found out to be a false flag, Jesus.
Yeah.
We need some Michael's and Vinny lawyer action going on up here. That's
There's a lot of people going to go down if this
absolutely,
one gets exposed.
Absolutely, man. Kraft International.
Yeah. But everybody in it, like the green jogger lady we mentioned just because she was...
Yeah, this is the last of the weird conspiracy
theories. Because this might be the moment that the bomb went off. This might be the person that detonated.
Yeah.
So this is one of the first things I ever came across when I looked at this, and this is the thing that kind of captured me into it, was the story of the green jogger. So you watch the video again, and I've seen the video before, I've seen it on the news. It's the iconic video kind of shot from above of the bomb, first bomb going off.
Big wide angle.
Yeah, and what you see at that moment is there's a lady in orange kind of crossing the line.
It's at the 4:09, 4 hours and 9 minutes, man.
Yeah, there's a lady in green just behind her left shoulder. Just kind of appears as the frame moves on over her left shoulder. kind of seems to brace a little bit, just like a second before the bomb goes off, and then as the bomb goes off, turns, half turns and throws something.
Doesn't flinch at all.
Doesn't flinch at all. Kind of half turns and throws something behind her with her left hand.
Yeah, it seems like a white thing. It's
like a white box.
It can only be seen on very high res versions on YouTube. I have one that I downloaded to the computer that I'm going to put up on our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Where it shows it like very, very clearly.
Yeah, and you can see it flying out of her hand and going backwards. And then what you have is, again, the very iconic old man in the orange and black shorts running behind her.
Collapses in a fucking arse.
Yeah, now what a lot of people saw at first was that guy kind of collapsing really weird as the bomb
really
went off.
Weird.
As if, you know, as if, I don't know, he'd been hit with a piece of shrapnel in some weird position.
He got frightened and he did it like the old man, like, get down!
Slowly,
but he didn't
really
dive,
slowly
like,
ducking down to the ground.
From Lethal Weapon.
But when you watch it again closely, what you notice is as she turns and seems to throw something with her left hand over her shoulder, he seems to try to catch it off her.
He reaches out with his left hand.
He reaches out with his left hand.
In like super deadly reflexes for an old dude, and just goes, whap, and he just...
And quite a dangerous fashion as well. Again, the reason he falls over and crumples so weird is because his body is so outstretched trying to catch this item that the only way for him to not fall on his head is to kind of crumple his legs underneath his body. Really odd situation. Just I remember seeing that and I couldn't stop watching that clip over.
Yeah,
I must have watched it like 50
again.
Times in
yeah.
a row when I first...
Just figure out what
happened. Like when I first spotted it, happening, I went, wait a minute, and I just watched it again and watched it again and watched it again. And I remember going, we were talking, and you were watching it on your end, I was watching it on my end, and I was saying, are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Yeah,
like, what?
I was watching the Lorez version, and I couldn't see what was happening.
Yeah,
but I went and looked it up afterwards, and I found a news report of a guy. Do you know the way they get like these high director's chairs and they sit in front of like a burning building and go, well, here we are in front of this burning building?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
we
a
have
shoot,
a guy
the 6 o'clock report.
Or, yeah, it's really like too close for comfort, nearly, you know. And they're interviewing the dude, and his name is Bill Ifrig, and he's 78 years of age. And he's the old man who went down after catching the device. And they don't ask him about like the device or did he catch it. And they're like, what happened? He's like, I just got a fright and I just hit the deck. Just like explaining it away or whatever to kind of quell the conspiracy theory.
Yeah, exactly.
Minds.
To have an answer there and for debunkers to put forward and say, this man explained this.
In Silva's pictures and in Silva's videos, Bill can be seen holding and then giving a device to a yellow jacketed person from the lying down position.
Yeah.
So he caught this device. Someone
he palms it off.
All right. He's like, yeah, here, take this. He's like, yeah, cool. Like,
give it to the craft guys.
It's all there.
Yeah.
It's all there. And and the Green Jogger Woman and Bill Ifrig definitely want to get an article on
the Green Jogger Woman may well be the person who detonated the bombs. And you see them do that as they're crossing the finish line.
Well, it wasn't the turn, I guess, anyway.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So, real quick.
Yeah.
We've been in this for a long time.
Yeah, sorry, folks.
This is a heavy...
Well, to be honest, if you're not kind of intrigued by this, there's something wrong with you.
This is as quick as it could be done without missing out on anything.
Exactly.
We're thorough.
You're thorough, yeah. You can't deny that.
Long-winded, but thorough.
We didn't want to leave you hanging on anything.
So we're going to go off the fence. Paul,
okay.
Get off the
nice
fence.
And quick. This is a fucking false flag event.
False flag.
Now look, the thing with a false flag event is it doesn't mean it's always like completely staged, or it doesn't mean it's always completely real. It doesn't mean that it's always just done by a terrorist group who are acquiesced, allowed to just do it, and there's a stand down happening. It doesn't mean there's always like hitmen that are employed to pretend to be the terrorists.
My hop and lie hop.
Yeah, it can be any kind of Venn diagram type combination of all of these factors. And what I think you have here is you have a first bomb that was a smoke bomb. You have a second bomb that was a bit more of a bomb but didn't have any shrapnel or much shrapnel or anything in it. But it was enough that it actually may have killed some people, like a small boy, and injured maybe 100 other people. Then while that second bomb goes off, it's enough of a distraction that the people can be moved into place for the first bomb in order to just ramp up all the drama of it. So not actually have to go out and kill a lot of people where the investigation would become really strong, but just control the event so the number of people you want killed are killed, and the victims you want killed are killed, and the horrific scenes you want shown are shown, and then you get to impose your quickly moving on to the manhunt and the imposition of martial law. Because if 100 people had been killed, the memorial service would have carried on too long.
Yeah.
The you know, like when you're watching your favorite TV soap opera and a character dies, you go, oh, it's going to be all mopey in this fucking soap opera for a while.
Yeah.
But the soap opera is usually just turning around in like half an episode. It's back to, you know,
someone gets pregnant, someone gets a slap.
Like that, basically. They wanted an event where they didn't want too many people hurt, but just enough. Not too many people killed, but just enough.
So they can have a load of like militarized police rolling around Boston.
In one way, I'd say it was executed really well because it worked.
Yeah,
it's done, and you know, Zahar faces his trial now, and he's probably going to go to jail for the rest of his life, or he's going to die. But there's no question for me. Absolutely no question. That's it. I'm off the fence. 100%.
False flag.
Yeah, false flag. Some things may be real. There might be people out there who are like, how dare you say it's bullshit? I can show you the scar on my leg. I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry that happened to you. But look at the evidence. Look at these things. How can you... It's bullshit.
Yeah.
Not all of it, but the stuff that we've talked about, the stuff that we've highlighted as complete bullshit, is complete bullshit. End of story. And whoever the fuck's doing this, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What happens if the fucking alien show up someday? How are you going to explain yourself? Or God, if you believe in God, and what happens if God shows up someday? How are you going to explain yourself?
Yeah, it's pretty, Jesus, like, it's pretty crazy. I don't know, folks. I know you can't see what's happening when you're just listening to us in your ear holes. But Paul's intense stare at the camera for that last maybe 40 seconds of that diatribe, it put a chill up me. I have to say, he's impassioned about
I'm
this
imagining
topic,
someone.
As am I, and that's why you're getting an extra long.
A personification
super
of someone that does this, and I'm a hater.
About the Boston bombers. Like, this is this is one of the big ones. This is, like, you know, it's serious, it's obvious, and it definitely.
It needed doing, but I'm shocked at how much was in it. Gordo, off the fence.
I'm going to get off the fence. I definitely think it was a false flag. 140% a false flag. Mm-hmm. Everything that we've looked at, and that's not even everything. We had to leave shit out, folks, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I had to leave stuff on the editing floor. I had to leave stuff out of our show notes. And so much info around this. And you could watch documentaries till the cows come home. There's a lot of them that are shit. We're going to sift through. I have about 50 bookmarks in my browser belonging to this thing. And we're all gonna pare them down and get a really nice set of articles to go with this. So you can, while you're listening to the show, you can maybe go on and have a check of the video. I definitely believe this is false flag. Carlos Arredondo is our Gene Rosen. He is 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag, that chap. Full of the bullshit. Jeff Bauman already had no legs. What the fuck, son?
Yeah.
There's pictures of you as an army officer, thumbs up with a fella around your shoulder, and you have like those little weird bows tied off on the bottom of your combats.
And also, when he goes to the hospital in Boston, after 4 days, he has his first below the knee operation, doesn't work, has his two above the knee amputations 4 days later. And 2 days later, he's out of the hospital. Less than 2 weeks later, he's out of the hospital.
Yeah, from amputations.
After having four technically amputation operations on his legs in less than 2 weeks, he's out of the hospital. Bull of fucking shit.
So that, between that and the bombs, having no shrapnel, being like just basically smoke bombs. I remember watching at the time, like 2 years ago, watching people putting up straight away going, this is not a bomb. This is a fucking flashbang.
Yeah.
This is not a bomb.
What kind of a bomb does it knock over like a sign?
Yeah, what kind of a bomb doesn't emit enough of a shockwave to make flags flutter?
Yeah.
Like, the bomb goes off and the flags stay static.
Yeah.
Like, not really much of a bomb. And I know there's people hurt. Yeah, it's the border between reality and false flag operation. Like, stuff happens in real life. But did it happen the way they say it happened? I know, like Paul said, somebody can pull up and go, hey, I've got a big fucking piece of metal in my leg because of that. And you're like, well, I'm really sorry about that, but it wasn't Tamerlan Tsarnaev who pressed a button on a toy car remote control to blow up a pressure cooker pot full of nails and one of them flew into your leg. It wasn't him to press that button.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't him to plant that bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And he's dead now.
Yeah.
Under very, very suspicious circumstances, along with a whole lot of other people. And there's a 21-year-old chap sitting in a jail cell right now as we're talking about this, and his life is being decided on when he's 100% innocent. Like,
mm-hmm.
I believe anyway. I'm not promoting terrorism. I'm not saying that, you know, if he did what he did, he should have done it. I'm saying that this chap, by all like respects and all research that I've done, didn't really have a whole lot to do with it. And according to his friends who were interviewed on news reports all over the place, say he's a lovely chap.
Yeah.
Lovely, nice little chap, like, you know what I mean? And he's probably shitting himself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, these false flags, like the Men in Black, the Kraft International guys, the B Squad, like, all of this kind of stuff, the Boston Police Commissioner's slip.
Yeah.
That's even like, yeah, we've heard this before. We've heard like Gene Rosen making. Yeah.
We've seen police officers at press conferences saying the wrong thing.
Yeah, like the Green Jogger and the Sandy Hook principle. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
That's
folks.
Like, That is crazy.
We'll put those pictures on the website. Have a look at the crazy red flags to her to somebody who's looking at
conspiracy theory. Yeah. That's crazy red flags going, some shit is happening here. So I 100% believe that it is a false flag. 100% believe that shit went down really well executed. Like, mm-hmm. way better executed than Sandy Hook.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe executed is the wrong word to use there. But really
they
well
just
played out.
Decided to have actual casualties in this one.
Yeah, like, there's... it's so hard to discern between like reality and something that's done for
unless
for
you're on the ground over there and go and talk to people in the community and say, did you know this person that got hurt? Do you know this person that got hurt? Do you actually physically know anybody that got hurt?
Yeah, it's very hard, like, and you have to question your sources. Like I said, all of this stuff that we're getting, it could be put forward to us through the internet, but like, we're getting it from loads of different sources that corroborate that story.
Hmm.
So if they're all getting it from the one source, you know, maybe it's wrong, maybe it's right. For everything that I've read, definitely take it to false flag.
Mm-hmm.
100%. And we're going to throw up loads of stuff on the website. You can check us on the Facebook.
Indeed.
On / Those Conspiracy Guys. We're on Twitter @ Conspiracy Guys. We'll definitely be on to you. We're really happy that you're still back listening. We're really enjoying this.
Thanks for staying with us, folks.
There was a little bit of a break after Christmas. We're really, really glad to still keep making shows. And we're going to keep going. All into 2016, hopefully, if you don't get rendered or taken out.
Yeah, I'm sure we won't.
Someone will accuse us of some bombing sometime. It'll be all like, the only place I bombing is on a stand-up comedy stage, baby.
Yeah.
If you wanted to get in contact with us privately without using social medias or whatever, thoseconspiracyguys@gmail.com is always open to you. You can send us like show requests, or you can send us maybe clips on topics that you've heard over this last season, or even on the first 14 episodes. And we'd be able to make them into articles and definitely reply to anyway. We'd love to have that interaction with you.
We would indeed.
And thanks very much for listening. This has been Those Conspiracy Guys. I've been Gordon.
I've been Paul.
And you were listening to the Boston Bombings. It's tough, lads.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough out there.
But you know, if you think we're bullshitting, check your sources.
Read it yourself.
We're not bullshitting.
It's all out there. So thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot, folks. Thanks for staying with us.
Good night and goodbye.